Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Hello and welcome back to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Thankfully, all the international football is nearly out of the way, but we have the matter of reviewing all the action from match day 26. We decided to take last week off because we needed a breather from the intense football schedule, but now we are ready to go with the final eight match days of the season. As per usual, my colleague alongside me to help review the action from match day 26 and beyond. Eva Lotte Baller. Eva, welcome. Happy to have you. Have you enjoyed the week off?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's always nice to have a week with not being angry with my own football club, but rather laugh about the German Federation in general and, well, not caring about, well, that's wrong actually, but not wanting to bother with politicians in Germany deciding what to do with COVID after 12 months. So that is fun. Yeah, but in general, it's very sunny here. So that's a relief after having snow on Saturday. Now it's sun at like 22 degrees. That's kind of cool. And yeah, very happy to be back as well.
We're always happy to have you alongside me. There is nothing that beats the clown show that is the DFB, and we will talk about them later on in the program. But first, we're going to talk about the action that matters, which is the Zweite Bundesliga. And we are going to start with the league leaders, VfL Bochum, who, after coming under some pressure from Hamburg, which we'll talk about in a moment, they secured a comfortable 3-0 victory over Fortuna Düsseldorf. Simon Zoller, Gerrit Holtmann and Soma Novotny getting the goals. Novotny is very charitable after a pretty calamitous error from Florian Carstenmeier. Eva, this game surely puts the nail in the coffin for Fortuna's promotion chances. But for Bochum, you know, the first team to reach 50, and as we've seen in recent history, the teams that score 50 first end up promoted.
Yeah, I was a bit impressed on the way they managed to win this game. I mean, if you compare it to the 5-0, the first leg, this was a different game because Fortuna actually tried to play football in this one as well. The way they used their chances was, well, not good, to put it nicely, especially just to sum it up, there was this Henning chance at the beginning of the second half, and he's like, I don't know, 6 meters before the goal, and normally this is something you would not want as an opponent, to have Henning's that way of, or that opportunity to score. And well, you could say it was a field goal rather than a normal goal. I do think in the end the score sheet was a bit too high for Bochum. It wasn't as clear as the result might suggest. Who I want to point out in this game is really Gerrit Holtmann, because he is improving from game to game. He's one of the fastest players we have at the moment in German football, not only the Zweite Liga, but in German football. His crosses are very accurate. He plays very well together with Zoller and Jules, which you could see before the 2-0, for example. And just in general, he has become a very vital factor of the Bochum, yeah, scores, goal scoring, and yeah, they used their chances very well, and they needed that after the defeat against Hamburg, especially because Hamburg picked up points, vital win for Bochum as well.
Absolutely, and you do mention Holtmann, and he's been relatively solid without providing the scoring touch. In this game, he was able to I think he set up the opener for Tsolo, and what a pass it was. And then obviously got on the score sheet as well with a very nice goal with the defender draped all over him and then just swiftly passing the ball past Kastamai. But yeah, he's become a good pickup for them on a free from Mainz. And yeah, they're very much building a case now as the season progresses, as we enter sort of that final, you know, third of the season. He's going to become pivotal, and a good thing for them is it wasn't a reliance on Jules to really provide the offense. They found multiple different avenues and well worthy of the win. It must be said that, you know, Manuel Riemann, who, you know, choosing to play under the circumstances that he did, he played a fantastic game. He was brilliant, you know. As the XG says, you know, Dusseldorf were able to create some high quality chances, but he was truly, truly outstanding, and he should be proud of his performance as of his season as well. Let's talk Hamburg then, because, you know, Hamburg are now putting themselves in a position where they could, at a third time of asking, go up. 2-0 win over Heidenheim, a fixture that they have had trouble with in the past. Both goals coming from the returning Tim Leibold, who was playing in a more attacking role at the left of midfield. And his performance was brilliant. The catalyst for their win, two goals for him and all 3 points. What it does do is it puts a lot of pressure on Kiel, who have got a couple of games in hand, as well as Greuther Fürth, to get results. But at the moment, currently sitting in second, Eva, and Hamburg, at the moment anyway, controlling their destiny for promotion.
Yeah, and compared to the Bochum game, it was actually a rather deserved win. Not saying that the win against Bochum wasn't deserved at all, but just from the way the game went, I thought it was a very impressive display by Hamburg throughout the game. They didn't let Heidenheim having any kind of or any sort of really dangerous chances in their own half, and generally had a couple of chances. Really want to point out not only Leibold but Aaron Hunt, because I do think he stepped up this season, like compared to the last couple of seasons or possibly even his last Bundesliga seasons. The way he cemented his place in this team is very impressive for his age, I do think. He was part of at least one of the goals in this game just from the build-up. And yeah, Heidenheim's defending was rather poor, I thought, throughout the game. And when they had the chance to get one back, I don't know what Pick was thinking there, but he did not only miss his chance once, but like three times. he had a number of chances to take that shot and he didn't. And as his teammates, let's just say I wouldn't be really happy with him afterwards, because we know that Hamburg can slip up as soon as they are being put under pressure. But if you 2-0 up, your opponents are really throwing away the best chance they have in that game. You comfortably play until the end. And this time their win wasn't really being endangered after that chance by Pick. So yeah, really, really important win, similar to the Bochum win, especially seeing that next game we'll talk about in just a couple of seconds. Huge win.
It was, and I'm glad you mentioned the Pick chance, because it was by far their best chance of the game. And all I can think of is Tim Kleindienst on his left hand side being like, why aren't you passing the ball to me, or why did you not take the shot first time? And once he got caught on the ball and was really indecisive what he was doing, Hamburg were, you know, they had bodies all around guarding the goal, and it was only going to end in a corner. So it kind of summed up their game, really, because they really didn't have that attacking punch going forward. And when they did, they kind of found ways to make a meal of it. So, yeah, they were pretty disappointing at large, but Hamburg, well worth the win. They do control their destiny for the moment, and they do put a little bit of pressure on Holstein Kiel. The last of our Group 1 games is Greuther Fürth. They hosted Nürnberg in the Franken Derby. Of course, it's not really the same because there's no fans in the stadium, but it didn't mean that the two teams put up a bad contest. In fact, it was quite a good one, ending 2 goals apiece. Harvard Nilsson scoring his 8th goal of the campaign on 8 minutes. And then Nürnberg really turned the tide in the second half. Enrico Valentini's shot was deflected off Raum and into the goal. And then Eric Shurinov, you know, a very highly talented junior from De Club, getting the start again, getting his first goal. And it looked like Shurinov's goal was going to be enough, except Dixon Abiyami once again popping up late. He's made a specialty of that for this season, getting goal number 5 for him and a point. And, you know, for a game that probably may lack emotion because there was no fans, either it's fair to say that the Nürnberg players, they were shattered at the end of this game.
Yeah, well, they could have deserved the win, especially because they got better at the end of the first half, sorry. And, well, I mean, pretty much up to the 19th minute. But on the other hand, I do think it's no coincidence that both goals came from headers. I mean, first you had a really good build-up by Maya Höfer and Gota. And, I mean, Nürnberg know that Nielsen can hurt them. I mean, he has done it in the first leg. And Nielsen is famous for scoring headers, actually. And then that second goal, there were actually 4 players who could have scored that goal. Mm-hmm. If you look at the scene, no Nürnberg player is close to the third players. And, I mean, you can actually see it in the scene. Nobody is running towards any of those 4 third players that are standing, well, I mean, in that penalty area. And it's a bit worrying, I would say. I mean, I do understand that at some stage you do not defend set pieces as well as you did maybe in the beginning. But especially if you know how food can operate and you have some kind of tactic, please don't throw it away in the last couple of seconds. So in a way, it was deserved that food got that point. They were the better team up like 4-4, better amount of the first half. I do really like seeing Maya Hofer play. I think he's one of the surprises of the season because he wasn't really on my list last season. And yeah, so in general, Shurinov, you talked about him for a moment. Do you think he can be a very interesting player to look at? Because he had another chance in that first half and you can really see that he lives for the club and he really wanted that goal. So he might be a vital factor for Nürnberg coming the end of the season. And yeah, I mean, in the end, both teams can't really do a lot with that 1 point, seeing how the other teams have played. But it was one of the better Franken derbies we have seen in the last couple of years, I guess.
Yeah, and it was a shame that no one could be in there. But it is an interesting thing because both teams will be looking to, whether they stay in the Zweite Bundesliga or not, Greuther Fürth, they have a few players that they need to sign up. The likes of Branimir Hugurta, Harvey Nilsson, Julian Green, Mirjam Mavra and Paul Jarkel, all out of contract at the end of the season. Yeah. So if they don't go up, you can tell that they will be hot commodities, excuse me, for teams that have either come down from the Bundesliga or teams that are really going to mount a challenge for the title. Also, Nürnberg really keen to keep Mads Møller Daly. He was pretty good in this game. It will cost €1.5 million if they can sign him. I think I speak for most people who would love to see him back in the Zweite Bundesliga full time once again. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we are going to head to the Bremer Brücke when Osnabrück hosted St. Pauli. Osnabrück were seeking their first win in 11 when they hosted St. Pauli on match day 26. But with a new manager in charge, the status quo remained the same. Despite getting a point the week before, they failed to secure a win this time around. And this time, St. Pauli were the recipients of the win, and it was the usual suspects who got it done. Guido Burgstaller, Omar Mamouche, 2-0. But Mark Heider, in the peroxide here, he got his second goal in consecutive games, but they couldn't get back the deficit. What it means, Osnabrück still holding on to 16th, with Sandhausen and Würzburg chasing. St. Pauli moving up into 11th place. And Eva St. Pauli really brought it to the table throughout this game, and hard to really deny that they were the team worthy of the victory.
Yeah, though the way that victory came together is a bit surprising, though. They had 70% possession the first half, couldn't really convert that into goals. And then shortly after the beginning of the second half, you had that penalty, which is still kind of a joke for me, or to me. I think, I do think I saw some kind of quote somewhere that even the St. Pauli player says, or Trapp says, Maurice Trapp, who was kind of the bad guy in this scenario, said that the St. Pauli player came up to him and thought it wasn't a foul or something like that. Like, no guarantees here. But it, all in all, was definitely deserved. I mean, if you come from that rather questionable penalty to the Mamouche goal, that was pure class, just the way like it built up. I really like Omar Mamouche. I think he's a very, very good player. I hope if he goes back to Wolfsburg, he will not be staying in their second team, because I'm quite sure he's not ready for Bundesliga yet, but he's definitely a player I want to see more of. Together with Salazar and Kyrie, St. Pauli has a very good team up front there. And of course, Burgstaller, the mixture is very well put together. After a couple of months where it didn't work out that well. And then to coming to Osnabrück, they put pressure on St. Pauli way too late. That goal came was just not coming at the right stage. If it would have been a bit earlier, like up to 20 minutes, would have been closer. But St. Pauli was dominant throughout that game. For Osnabrück, not really helping them a lot. They would have been vital to get points out of this, but not necessarily at this stage of the season the game you would have expected them to win.
No, not with St. Pauli's form in this calendar year. It was always going to be a relatively difficult chance for them to pick up points, and they just didn't really have it. They did have a couple of chances that they didn't really put away, but St. Pauli's application to the game was far superior, and in the end, they were worthy winners in this one. Let's make a move to Paderborn. They hosted Karlsruhe. Pretty good game, it has to be said, but Karlsruhe mightn't be too pleased with only a point. Game ended 2 goals apiece. Philip Hoffmann opened the scoring just a couple of minutes in to get his 10th of the campaign. And then Paderborn's reliable duo of Dennis Abeni and Christian Furyk getting on the score sheet, 12 goals and 11 respectively. And then in stoppage time, much like in the Franken derby, it's Bobakar Gieye who got his first of the campaign to give Karlsruhe a share of the points. The irony for Karlsruhe is that both goal scorers for them were former Paderborn players. Eva Karlsruhe were pretty good in this game. They had a ton of golden opportunities, but they were thwarted by the great goalkeeping of Leopold Zingler. They'll be a little bit disappointed they didn't win this one.
Well, first of all, totally agree with you here. It was a very good game to watch. You were always a bit on edge with this game, with those both teams involved. I do think there were a number of persons who were a bit angry at the towards the end. First of all, I thought Collins would turn straight into Hades from the Disney movie, because he got a second yellow for time wasting, if I'm correct. We normally only see this mainly from goalkeepers, but he already had a yellow card, so he was sent off for that. And then he kind of has the ball in his hand and runs towards Harm Osmas with it. I was a bit afraid he just going to lose it. He was still very angry after the whistle was blown, but in the end, it was deserved that Karlsruhe got that leveling goal. The way maybe it came together in the end, because Paderborn was one man down, be it unlucky. But yeah, Andvi Ajay had the really big chance to make it 3-1. Kobalt with a very good save on the line, because Gersbeck was already beaten in that situation. And I mean, on the other hand, the Hoffman penalty, the second one, kind of opens up the discussion if it's always that good to let the same person shoot another penalty after he converted the first one. There were a number of points you could discuss in this game, but in the end, it was some kind of advertisement for the Zweite Liga, because it was a good game. You never had the feeling one team is toning it down a bit, but it was good quality from both sides, and it was a 2-2 of the better sort, you could say.
Yes, absolutely. I guess there's a few points you made, Eva, and I'll touch on. Now, the Jamalou Collins one was, I feel like when he, after he'd been sent off and it looked like he was running towards him, he channeled many, many of football fans who have had great grievances over Osmas as an official. And, I can't speak from personal experience, but I'm sure that there are others who have a fond disliking to the way he goes about officiating games. I'm not going to mention names, but that could have ended interestingly. But I don't oppose Hoffman taking the second penalty. He made the first one. It makes perfect sense to take the second one, but this time Zingler learning from the first mistake, making a really good save. But yeah, I think as a whole, very entertaining game. Karlsruhe, it's their third draw in a row. And they really could have made things very uncomfortable for the likes of Fürth had they taken the 3 points here. Paderborn, the impression really with them is that they've got bigger things to worry about outside the pitch. What's going to happen with Stefan Baumgart at the end of the season? Kicker already, a few media outlets are starting to kick names around. I've heard Saarbrücken's manager, Kovnatski, being an option. He's done a pretty good job with Saarbrücken in the Dritte Liga. So their game is survival. They'll do that quite comfortably, I think. But it was a good performance. But the question will be is what happens at the end of this season? Which players will they be able to keep? And what squad will, if there is a new manager, will come to fruition? It's a very interesting space Paderborn in. Not one that they've been in for quite some time, because typically we're either seeing them get promoted or get relegated. So that kind of uncertainty is a bit different from what we've seen for them in the past, no doubt. Let's go to our final Group 2 game. Eintracht Braunschweig and Darmstadt. Braunschweig trying to continue their form of unbeaten games. And they did that. Five consecutive unbeaten games in a row now. 1-1 draw it was against Darmstadt. Darmstadt were hoping to go 3 in a row. And with Victor Paulsen, the Icelandic international, scored early on, it certainly seemed like Darmstadt were on their way. But Nick Proschwitz scoring from the spot It should be mentioned he had a penalty saved as well, much like Philip Hoffman, with Marcel Schoen making a very, very good save. I'm not sure what to make of this game. It felt very even for long periods, but you know, Braunschweig made a very good account of themselves, considering that they weren't really the fancied side in this game.
First of all, it was the first conceded goal for Braunschweig after having not conceded one over 400 minutes. In general, and this is maybe, although they conceded, why they didn't lose that game, very passionate defending throughout the game, I thought. I mean, Darmstadt had chances. Kaufmann had that huge chance for Braunschweig. Skarke was kind of unlucky. But yeah, for example, just to point out why I think it's was passionate defending. Behrendt had 13 clearances in general from of the 46 Braunschweig had throughout the game. In comparison, Darmstadt had 12. 46 clearances. You don't see that very often in the game, but it also shows that they wanted to not keep a clean sheet after that, but you kind of see where they were coming from with not having conceded a goal. Yeah, they actually both had a number of chances, but yeah, the defense of both teams was just quite good. You had Schoen in goal, as you've mentioned, who was doing a good job, as well as Jasmin Fasic on the other side. So in the end, once again, it's a draw that both teams can live with. It's not helping them, in especially not Braunschweig, but on the other side, or on the other hand, it's not a defeat. Very crucial if you see how the other teams have played.
Absolutely. I mean, Braunschweig were maybe a little bit disappointed that they couldn't maintain their clean sheet record as they were going. They've been unbelievably resolute, considering that, you know, prior to that time period, they'd conceded 43 goals. So they've improved a lot, which is very important, especially when you're trying to avoid the relegation zone. You know, part of that is having the move of, and we mentioned this many months ago, that Brian Behrendt is not a right back. As much as you could try him as a pseudo right back, he is a centre back. And him and Diakate have made a very stable partnership. And it could be a crucial one for them as they try and avoid, at the very least, the relegation playoff. You know, they've got a 3-point cushion to Osnabrück, who do have a game in hand. You know, that's very crucial to, at the very least, minimize the opportunities, the good opportunities for their opponent. And they've done that. It's also to mention that we haven't said that Darmstadt have defended well very often this season. And as Eva pointed out, very, very stable when they needed to. They did give up a couple of chances. They were lucky in a way that Schoen bailed them out with the penalty save. But all in all, you know, again, both teams will take the point, although, you know, a win would have done so much more for both sides. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll look at the final two games of Match Day 26, starting with Erzgebirge Aue and Sandhausen. Our final two games begin with Erzgebirge Aue and Sandhausen. A 2-0 victory, it would be for the host. And it would be their two top scorers, Florian Kruger, Pascal Testrot, getting on the score sheet. Both now have 11 goals this season. Of course, Florian Kruger, during this international break, linking up with the U21s. Eva, we always know how tough it is to get a result at the Erzgebirge Stadion. Aue, prior to this game, winless in their last three. Decent performance. Got the job done. You know, they really, especially after halftime, really put the squeeze on Sandhausen, and in the end were probably worthy of the 3 points.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, Sandhausen did have a good start into the game, try to put pressure on Auer, but the way they tried to end that, I mean, they actually had 16 shots on goal, but only two out of them were on target, so that kind of sums it up a bit. Wasn't that dangerous or wasn't that accurate, actually? And as soon as Auer started to score, Sandhausen did nothing. Like, basically, when it then mattered to, step up, they completely gave up this game. Auer could have, I think, even made it 3-0. Quite fast summed up this one. Sandhausen didn't use their chances in the first half. Auer did with Krüger and Testrot. Game over.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was a killer 1-2 punch that Auer have got. And yeah, Sandhausen really didn't do much in the second half, and they were worthy of their defeat. They did announce some news though during the week that they would be ending their 20-year affiliation with Puma. They'll be wearing Macron kits as of next season, no matter if they're playing Zweite Bundesliga or Dritte Liga. They will be the fourth club in German football to be wearing Macron kits alongside Hanover, Karlsruhe, and of course Arminia Bielefeld. Our last game is Würzburg and Jahn Regensburg. This game ended a goal apiece. Ridge Muncy made it seven for the season when he scored on 22 minutes, and Andreas Albers also got his seventh of the campaign on 75 minutes to give Regensburg a share of the points. Regensburg had 27 shots in this game to 10. But really couldn't get past a pretty resolute Würzburg defense. But it would be fair to say, Eva, that Würzburg were none too pleased at the end of this game. They felt that there was a foul in the build-up to the goal that Andreas Albers would convert. Did they have a case?
Yeah, I do think so. In my opinion, even seeing it after the third time, that's not a fair way of winning the ball for me. So it should have been a foul. It wasn't overturned, but in the end, I mean, the goal came from that situation, but I'm kind of sure that Regensburg would have found the back of the net in some ways. They didn't after that. Maybe a win would have been a bit too much because Würzburg did put in an effort. I mean, you can't really expect from a team that hasn't played for 16 days, the other team that went into quarantine. So a lot of from both of the sides was actually the expected game, I would say. Especially in the second half, not really pretty to watch. Doesn't help Würzburg, at least it's not a defeat. For Regensburg, they have win another point separating them from those bottom teams, but it's not really the freedom they want from that, basically.
Well, they are still 7 points clear, and they do have the game in hand, which is going to be very important down the line. I think they might be a little bit disappointed, even though, as you mentioned, they hadn't played for more than 2 weeks. They created a ton of opportunities on that Würzburg goal. And regardless of whether it was a foul or not, I do agree with you. They were pressing for an equaliser at the very least, and I think they were going to get it either way. Just happened to come on rather dubious circumstances. But yeah, Würzburg, had they won, would have closed the gap to, I think it was 7 points. No, not even 7 points. It would have been 4 points instead of six to Sandhausen. And then it would have made things very, very interesting going forward, especially with the game in hand they've got themselves. So it is shaping up to be a very tight tilt at the bottom of the table. Braunschweig with that advantage of 3 points to Osnabrück, who also have the game in hand. So it is on a knife's edge. The Zweite Bundesliga is on a knife's edge, and it is very, very exciting. But before we go, there are a couple of topics we wanted to talk about that have taken place during the international break. Our German listeners would may know about the Dietmar Hopp documentary. I haven't seen it, so I won't talk about it because I'm not entirely sure what it's about. But Eva has watched it. So Eva, perhaps a little bit of context behind the documentary itself, and your impressions about some of the remarks that were made during it.
Yeah, so to start a year ago, more or less, I'm sure you guys all remember that Hoffenheim Bayern game where at some stage it was nearly to be ended after Bayern was 6-0 lead, and then for the last 10 minutes they were just passing the ball to each other because there were some, well, banners in the Bayern block, or away block there, which stated some facts about maybe Dietmar Hopp's mother, so very kind of sexist of offense towards Dietmar Hopp. And the game was, well, in general, it was really there was a lot of talking. The Sky commentator, you could have guessed that he was commentating on some kind of war crime. And this whole documentation is about Dietmar Hopp kind of versus the ultra scenes. So there has been protests against Dietmar Hopp since 2007, so since he actually went into football business with the TSG Hoffenheim, never really dialed down there. There was a time when it got less. This was basically when RB Leipzig emerged from nowhere. And well, it has, there were other ways of offending Dietmar Hopp, but at some stage the ultras saw that the only way to get really attention was by using crossbars with his face on it, as well as, well, that sexist comment about his mother. The thing is, those two sides are really sticking to what they think. It has been always that way, but there was a stage when the DFB said, so German Football Association said, there will be no collective, well, in a way that if one or two fans don't behave, that the whole group will be excluded. But after that whole drama around Hoffenheim and Dortmund emerged again, the DFB took that back, which, well, really relighted the spark in that whole Hopp matter. So, and then really with that whole Hoffenheim Bayern game being the tipping point, you could say. So, and then there's this documentary which interviews a couple of people, including Uli Hoeneß, who's a friend of Hopp's, Schickard, who is Hopp's lawyer. So Hopp does not speak in this documentary himself, but there are also two members of the ultra scene of the Schickeria for Bayern Munich. And the reason why I was a bit skeptical about this in the first place was because it was all being put together by Jochen Breyer, who was one of the people who was not that, well, not putting a lot of criticism towards the whole matter, especially towards Hopp, because he had affiliations with Hoffenheim. But it's actually, in general, it's a good documentary because it sheds light on that whole day that actually Bayern and Hoffenheim and actually the whole league knew about that, knew that was going to happen because the ultra scene told that. Well, they told Hoeneß that it's going to happen in some ways. Then, of course, Hoeneß told Bayern, Bayern told Hoffenheim, Hoffenheim told the DFB in some ways. The referees knew about it, and then they implemented, we talked about that last year, that three-step plan, which is actually meant for discrimination and racism and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's around like a bit under an hour, I think. It's in German, so I don't know if there is any way of getting subtitles if you're not that good in German language. It's a bit interesting. It shows how messed up that whole situation is in many ways, and it just makes you angry how some officials see German football. That's a very long summary, I'm sorry.
No, that's it's good to give context, especially for those like myself who haven't seen the documentary itself, and to get a better perspective. It's not a surprise though that Dietmar Hopp didn't speak. I would assume that by the advice of the lawyer, anything he could have said could have been used against him. There was also the human rights protest by the German footballers, the national team, ahead of their game against Iceland, taking into account the 6,500 workers who have died working its stadiums for the Qatar World Cup, which is next year. And that was in relatively good taste from the players to wield support. And then the DFB decided that let's make it a marketing thing. Let's film it. Let's put it on Twitter and social media. Look how good our players are. And really, for me anyway, detracted from the message, and it was the DFB making it all about them. And that was pretty ordinary. The message was pretty clear. On the pitch, wearing the new way kit with human rights, all 11 players unified as one. And then they went and did that. I mean, I trust people like Leon Goretzka, Joshua Kimmich, Serge Gnabry, but I don't trust the DFB, who really made a mockery of it all in the hope of views. And one person who definitely shed light on it fantastically was DW's Jonathan Harding, who is a good friend of the show. So yeah, go check out his video on Twitter. It's about a minute and a half long, but he really depicts the situation. I guess, Eva, I'll get you to jump in before we go. The actual idea was in good taste, but the DFB, as I mentioned before, really wanted to make sure that everyone knew that they were on their side, even though it doesn't really seem that way.
Well, the thing is, I didn't watch the game. I don't watch anything that national team does for quite some time now. Well, I mean, in times when we speak about boycott Qatar, and I know that there are different views on that, not from not taking money into concern, but rather because actually workers from Qatar say that that wouldn't help. It helps to shed lights on it, which I think Norway started. They have been talking about a boycott. They started that, human rights, equal rights stuff in the first place. As you mentioned, turning that into marketing stunt. Horrible. And this is actually not where it ended, because in the game against Romania, they just turned their jerseys around with numbers, and it should have or symbolizes the 30 human rights amendments. Yeah, it looks like another spontaneous idea, but if we look at how that first spontaneous idea turned out to be, they actually turned that whole thing, as you've mentioned, or as you said, to talk about them, that it's all about them, that a good light is shed about them, on them, and this is not the way to do it. I'm not going to watch any Qatar games. I'm not going to watch any games of this year's European Cup. But yeah, it's really, really messed up. And I can't really understand how you could turn that towards yourself.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I should note is, before we go, when talking about the teams, because as we know right now, the international break is World Cup qualifiers for a lot of nations, especially the European sector. If their team qualifies, which players are actually going to say, I'm not going to play because of the Qatar situation? And that's one thing that I think is almost forgotten, is that, you know, the concept of the protest is very much correct, because the way that Qatar won the World Cup, which was absolute rubbish, because they bought the World Cup basically by bribing every official under FIFA, the conditions that the workers are working under, and the fact that it will be the first World Cup not held in the summer, screams red flags already. But which of the individuals who would have earned the right to play at the World Cup, but is pro human rights and against what's happening in Qatar, is going to say, no, I'm not going to play. I'm going to forfeit the right to play for the national team because I think this is wrong. That's the one thing that I'm interested in watching, because, you know, for a lot of these younger players, it may be the only time they make a World Cup. But then they're faced with the ethical dilemma of, well, this is wrong. It should never have happened, and I need to make a stand for it. So there's some food for thought. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We will be back next week as we review all the action from match day 27. We hope you are staying safe, and we'll see you next time.